Welcome to La Liga Weekly. Middle of August and already Real Madrid and Barcelona record 4-1 wins on the same weekend. Two-horse race, you see. The other 18 teams all lost, probably. No, we saw some fine football in La Liga this weekend. Ansu Fati's back heel, Modric's curling shot, Mariki's header, Izzy Palathon's free kick routine, none of which compare to Antonio Mateo Lahoz's double-handed yellow card, red card combination. Caris Thomas Sarkon shot down like a bat in an old Clint Eastwood. The referees did have a starring weekend with 7 penalties awarded and 6 red cards. We're only 8 games in. Thankfully for Terry and ITV4, they started with a fabulous game. Barcelona in front in 46 seconds, which was somehow against the run of play. Isak scored an equaliser that I thought in real time was suspiciously good. And then Xavi showed his tactical genius by sticking more strikers on and telling them to run around. Villarreal atop thanks to Atleti's Nahuel Molina, who compounded some bafflingly bad defending by adding a red card. Simeone then opted for a zero-man defence and no discernible formation whatsoever. Terry will explain all. He'll also explain to Rayo Vallecano that other football clubs sell tickets to their fans through their computers. Imagine some magical network that allows you to pay for a season ticket without sleeping outside the ground. We'll discuss the 8 games played so far. Some disrespect, of course, to Elche, Almeria, Girona and Getafe. Sorry about that. And we'll remember the former footballer, Carlos Casemiro. 5 times a Champions League winner, 3 La Liga medals. Next year, he'll be replacing Scott McTominay for the last 10 minutes at Bournemouth. We would like you all to join in with our Patreons. Joe and Ray have joined recently. Welcome along, fellas. Nice to have you on board. Paul has been in touch about Atleti. Well, remind me to get to that when we his frustrated thoughts when we get to that. Is an Atleti fan. Well, better start with the game that you covered for ITV4 last night, Terry. It was good, wasn't it? First, so the people who don't follow the English, you know, in England. It was on free-to-air TV in England, which we hope, or in UK and Ireland, I think, isn't it? I think ITV4. So therefore, people, hopefully a wider audience, so all the people who are just finishing watching Minder and reruns of the Sweden.
Magnum.
Yeah. stay for the football. And hopefully, Terry, they were all on time because it was an absolutely cracking game from the very beginning.
I was. I mean, it's a vehicle for La Liga in the UK. It does give people a taste, and it was a good game to pick. Great kickoff time. I think Sunday evening, when the rest of the football is finished, it's put your feet up and watch something from a different league. And in the first minute, it just all let rip, didn't it? And I was concerned going into their home form last year. The amount of points they won, the amount of goals they scored was ridiculous. 16 goals scored. They won 8. They won 10 games at home, and 8 of them were 1-0. They had 4 0-0 draws. So while you're trying to build this game up, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking it might be a 0-0 or a 1-0. So to see Real Sociedad go for it as they did, and you're right, in the 46 seconds when Barcelona scored their goal, they were on the ropes. Real Sociedad really went at them, and then a little bit of magic when they got the ball back from Petri, and suddenly they were out. Balde was lots of space to run into, and a mishit cross, I think. I didn't want to be too critical, that's the wrong word, but too harsh on the description of the cross into the box. But it looked like a cross come shot, the mishit and dragged, but then Lewandowski just sweeps it home. And then Isak with a similar finish as well. I'm still not convinced whether it's his dink that goes over to Stegen or the deflection with the block tackle Eric Garcia against his shin, and
I thought Eric Garcia wraps his foot around it and he's coming back as Isak is trying to shoot and it sort of squirts out and over. I'm not convinced Isak can finish that well.
It was a difficult one to see, but it was a good build up, wasn't it? The Cat Kubo, Silva involved, Isak running in behind and the finish. So it made right from the off a really good game. It was difficult to pick up the team style of Barcelona. Well, not the style, but the shape of Barcelona. Yeah. I did think, ponder before kickoff, whether it might be a cheeky back three. And it was. But it took a while to... Actually, I didn't get to work out the rest of the team, if I'm being brutally honest. Lewandowski was up front. Everybody else. Dembele was wide on the right. Stegen in goal. Balde played. That was the first clue I had, that Balde was playing at the same height as Dembele. And then Araujo was doing a cross sort of hybrid version of right back, right sided centre half. That's when I thought. Then I was trying to work out who's playing where Busquets normally plays. And just when you think it's De Jong, he'd gone. Then it was Pedri, then he'd gone. And then Pedri was playing closest to Lewandowski. Ferran Torres was playing almost alongside Lewandowski. So it was hard to work out the rest. But the only thing I would say is I actually really like what Xavi is doing in terms of the attacking players. And their willingness to win the ball back quickly means they don't have to defend. That's simplifying it. So he's going all out. I mean, at 1-1, and both teams had their chances. Ter Stegen pulled off a great save from David Silva, and Ralph Moreno had a good attempt. There was a bit of space down the left for Ralph Sosa's head that they exploited. So both teams were close to getting the second goal, and it could have gone either way. And at 1-1 away from home against Real Sociedad, I guess last week's result influenced Xavi's mindset going into the game. They wanted the win, but it is a really difficult place to go and play. So therefore, for him to then bring off Balde and put Rafinha on and play two out-and-out wingers as the part of the three-stroke-five-man defence, I mean, he's never five, he's three at best, was brave. And it had an impression on the players. And then Fatty comes on as well at the same time. And it has an impression on the players that we're not here for the draw. We're going all out for the win. And the players responded. As I say, their enthusiasm and willingness to win the ball back high at the pitch, which means it alleviates the pressure on the defence and the midfield. And the players seem to really, and I'm not surprised, seem to like that approach and that attitude. So it turned out to be a fantastic win for Barcelona. And the story tonight, I guess, has to be Fatty. Mm. You know, is that he comes on, he makes two and scores one. And it kind of, I said it in commentary, he kind of forgot how good he was and how effective he was, because he was scoring goals as a 17-year-old and he was scoring goals in those brief little spells that we saw him when he's returned from the long-term injury issues he's had. He scores a goal, then he's off injured again. And you kind of forgot how effective and how good he is, and still at the age of 19, he looks bigger and stronger than he did when we first broke into the team. But the skills, you know, involved in the build up for two of the goals and finishing off his own chance, it does leave you to wonder how on earth Xavi is going to sort out those. I think we got a clue last night with no Memphis and no Aubameyang coming on.
Yeah,
Ferran Torres gets a start, which was slightly strange, bearing in mind he didn't even come on the week before. So I think slowly but surely it's going to resolve itself, and Xavi's going to be left with a smaller squad, fewer players to pick from, and life might be a touch easier in terms of all these players getting an understanding with each other.
That's the scenario in which Barcelona learn how to sell players.
Yeah. Yeah. The right way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, yeah, yes. It's not something they've done well in recent times. Whether the new regime can pull it off, I don't know. But there's an interesting point you make, though, John. I mean, we can be critical and mock Barcelona. But there's loads of clubs like it now, because the big clubs put players on a wage level which prohibits them moving ever.
It's because it's a massive, it's a chasm between, well, how many clubs we're talking, less than 10. So the top Premier League, Real Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern Munich, PSG, isn't it? And maybe, I don't know, maybe Juve. Yeah, probably Juve sticking that. And, you know, maybe Inter. And after that, you plummet down, don't you? And Valencia can't buy a player off Barcelona. That's exactly a problem, isn't it? You know, so you're looking to try and sell players. I mean, obviously, Man United, the team, we'll get to Casemiro in a bit. Everyone's just trying to sell players like Man United and Chelsea. So, you know, they're desperate to. But then if they're sensible, they know that Barca have got to sell someone still, haven't they, this week, I would imagine? What are we now? We've got, 9 days left. They need to, because they still haven't registered Koundé, have they? So they need rid of Depay and or Aubameyang. Or, you know, they need to do something, don't they? Yeah.
I mean, Umtiti is the classic example. You could say Phil Jones at Man United is another one, where they can't sell these players because the wages that they're on are completely blown out the water by, you know, other teams can't.
And
the clubs then, the big clubs, it has to have an impact on future transfers, though. But You would think it won't. And it, you know, if the Uniteds and Chelseas and Liverpools, if they sign a player for £200,000-£300,000 a week and it doesn't work, that's in their thinking. You would imagine they will be thinking, but if this doesn't work, we're giving them a 5-year deal. But they're not. It's the desperation. When you look at some clubs now, I'm sure a manager would like to rip it all up and start again and look at the squad and go, I don't want 75% of these players. But yeah. We've got no choice.
Yeah.
We can't just keep buying new ones and discarding these players and people forgetting about them for a couple of years because they're not playing any football, and we might try and get them out on loan and pay. I mean, Lukaku is another one example. I keep picking on the teams, but Chelsea paid 90 million for a striker a year, had him a year, and they've loaned him, and they're paying a ridiculous amount of his wages. And what is the end result going to be? So that's the problem that Barcelona find themselves in, that the people like Martin Braithwaite don't want to go in and earn 30% of what they're earning at Barcelona.
So how much will Barca get for Frank Kessié when they sell him in January?
and we got the issue, we couldn't, they, you're hearing different things about what happens if they can't register him. And let's be honest, it's not a given. I think they'll do it because I thought they'd do it with the other signings and somehow they did. But he ends up going back to Sevilla.
And what happens to the money?
They can't sell him.
Yeah.
Well, there will be no money. Barcelona won't have to pay for him.
Oh, is that right?
But Sevilla get a player back.
Yeah.
They can't sell. And they've just bought two new centre-halves.
Yeah.
So, and will he be allowed to play for Sevilla? Because it'll be after the transfer window. There's a lot of things that I think the transfer window should shut when the season starts as well. I think that makes sense, doesn't it?
I do think that La Liga's needs to fit in with the other leagues. I think the leagues, I would have thought, wouldn't they? Because UEFA have got their own, haven't they? But then the leagues have all got their own various names now, but FFP essentially, isn't it? So you would think that there needs to be some coordination, because La Liga does seem to be harsher than everybody else's, isn't it? Where, you know, yes. Betis has still got, what, 6 players?
Are
unregistered? It's just, anyway. Crazy.
I know, I'm kind of feeling sorry for Betis, and I'm looking at him and I can't work out Betis. I don't think that, I'm sure they've got one or two players on big money, but they're 50,000 attendance for home games. I don't look at the whole of the squad and think, well, this is a club that's really overreaching. And yet somehow they've got 6 players that they're not allowed to play, plus injuries. And I'm feeling sorry for these like 11 players that are playing for Betis every game. It's bonkers. 2 games in. And it's probably helping the team and helping Pellegrini. He's got no choices.
Won the games, haven't they?
Yeah, and they're doing well and they're winning games and they've got players. But it's not ideal it's not ideal for the players. It's not ideal for the clubs. It's not ideal for supporters. When you bet you support 2 players and they can't play them.
Yeah.
They've got Joaquin, who's been there for like 150 years. And because he signed in the years, another contract for another year.
Yeah.
He can't play.
He's still paid in pesetas.
And we supporters don't want their teams to be prohibited from. I just don't get the Betis one. I kind of get the Barcelona one because of the debt, because of the amount of money they've spent on transfer fees, and I understand, and I do imagine that their wage bill is huge. In normal circumstances, when there wasn't a pandemic, they raise enough money to cover that wage bill. But I don't see how Betis and Almeria and Valladolid, who have all got players that they can't register, are coming up against this problem.
Shall we? Well, we've drifted into Betis. Let's just check off their game. This is some of the penalties from this weekend, isn't it? That won them the game. Actually, in this game, I thought the penalties were okay, weren't they? They're both Basaglia, aren't they, who gives them away. Mariki scores a really, really good header in between times for Mallorca. And so Betis probably deserved it. Is that fair to say?
It was close, actually. Yeah. I think possibly they've just shaded it.
Yeah.
But I thought, I was impressed with Mallorca. And Mariki can see, I think Xavi Costa, who puts the cross in, you can see when he's celebrating the goals, he's saying, that's what just keep doing that, you know, just keep putting the ball in that area with that quality, and he'll get on the end of things, whether he's knocking it down for teammates or scoring. But Battaglia had a game to forget the handball, and then the block on Fekir, where he actually thought he was fouled. So
did he really, or was he just pretending? It was,
I think footballers are weird, John. They really do think that when you see something, I probably did it as well. When you a complete, you know, clear decision goes against you, and yet you still think you're right. And it happens in every game. It happens, you know, players appealing for a throw when they know full well it's come off them and stuff like that. So Battaglia certainly struggled in this game. But Betis were good, and they've got that will to win and a bit of togetherness. They're, you know, going through a little bit of a troubled time. The players are sticking together, and it was another good win. If they can do that and keep going, if they can get the players registered, then they'll be in good shape to compete for a top four finish, because things have changed already since last week when I said it was going to be, oh yeah, Atletico are going to win. They've got a chance of winning the league. All of it in week two is Barcelona have gone from being poor to being brilliant in the second half, and that's how we go in football, isn't it? One week you're thinking this is set for the season. The second week, 2 weeks in, you're now thinking, oh, I might change my mind on that opinion.
Right. Well, let's do again as we've gone to Atleti. So they lose 2-0 at home to Villarreal. Yerry Pino and Gerard Moreno with the goals. Nahuel Molina had a moment, didn't he, for the Yerry Pino goal. Paul Campbell is one of our patrons. Patreon.com/Hilltale, by the way. There's tons I can say. He's an Atleti fan. But someone needs to grab hold of Simeone and convince him Condogbia and João Felix are unstoppable, and the latter needs to start playing 90 minutes before. It's the same issues making me think the 21-22 campaign hadn't yet ended. So
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree with Paul. I look at the substitutions an hour in, and he's taking players off, and there are players playing that I don't think should be. There's players not playing that I think should be playing, and the constant thing. I felt, genuinely believed, I was rather foolish and naive to think that he'd learned the lesson, because he made there was a really good interview at the end of the last season, and he said he knew what was the problem, and he knew, and I think I assumed he understood he was the problem.
Right, yeah.
Of chopping and changing the system every week, chopping and changing the system two or three times during a game, chopping and changing the team selection. So there is no continuity in midfield. There's no continuity up front. They have a good result from the first week, so I get why he hasn't changed the team. But then it just makes changes after an hour, and Morata and João Felix come off. It was... And the attitude of Atletico in this game, at home against Villarreal, to sit back and not close down and not go out to look as if they were going to win the game. It was a negative approach, which allowed Villarreal, with their style of play and the quality of players that they have. It was quite a straightforward win for Villarreal. It was one or two moments. Do you remember Rudy pulls off a sensational save? We don't have goal line technology in La Liga. So we use VAR, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, to VAR.
And I'm not convinced that weren't over the line.
We're not. Okay.
I'm not convinced. But it was close, so I do think maybe technology is still needed for that image.
Obviously, yeah. I don't happen to think it was in. I thought he did say, and it's a remarkable save. But
incredible save.
Yeah, why not have goal line technology? It's so simple, isn't it? It's you know, beyond. I think it's beyond argument. And certainly in other countries where we've got it. If you suggested taking it out, people would say, well, no, that was ridiculous. anyway.
The hour mark, taking off players, 0-0, so you're going to get João Felix and Morata, who pinned his hopes on the week before, and they both played really well. Morata making goals, scoring goals, Felix making goals. An hour in a tough game against Villarreal, they're taking off. And now they'd be thinking, just when I thought I was, you know, I need more than an hour in a tough game against good opponents. It's going to be a close match. If I don't do it 15 minutes into the second half, I'm going to be brought off. And then all that indecision. And it wasn't the type of performance I expected from Atletico. And in my opinion, in week two, I'm looking at Simeone and thinking, you haven't learned the lessons from last year. And if you believe you've corrected the problems, I don't know what you thought the problems were, if that makes sense. Because everybody else knew the problem. You know, the all the reasons I just mentioned, and there's so much indecision around the Atletico Madrid players that it leads to confusing performances. And Villarreal are a good team. They had a plan, and they were probably a little bit surprised that they were allowed so much time on the ball and time in possession, possession in the attacking half, because that's what Villarreal were good at. And they've got bright players, good players, and they punished Atletico. Jeremy Pino, you're right, the mistake from Molina. He was in the left-back position as well, wasn't he? And he's right back, and I'm guessing it was a cleared set piece that was put back into the box, can't remember properly, which allowed Pino to score the goal.
And he keeps it in play, doesn't he? Because that's the problem, isn't it? It's going nowhere, and he plays it into the penalty area.
He could have let it bounce.
Yeah.
There was no one really threatening him. And then the second goal, Moreno, it's 4-2.
Yeah. And it was a shambles, isn't it? The last five minutes or so, Atleti. Right. Okay. Let's do Celta Vigo 1, Real Madrid 4. Caudet saying afterwards, not quite sure how Real Madrid managed to win the game as convincingly as they did, but then we could have said that any point about 10 years. We've been saying that at the end of games.
I agree with him. I mean, it was a really close game, and yet every chance Real Madrid had, they took.
Yeah.
Apart from Hazard's penalty. That's what they do. They're good. I mean, they've won it. They've got a cutting edge to the team that is hard for teams to stop because of the quality. But it was a close game. Looking at Celta equalised at the 23rd minute, and then just before half time, Modric comes up. It's not even a chance, is it? And scores a wonderful goal. And he's involved in the other goals, and Vinicius and Valverde take their chances really well. I mean, Vinicius is clean through, isn't he? On the one where he goes round the keeper and slots it home. Valverde with a lovely finish. So it was a good performance. It was an 8 out of 10 performance from Real Madrid, possibly an 8 out of 10 performance from Celta, and they end up getting thumped because of the quality in the attacking third of the pitch for Real Madrid.
I would bring your attention to Hugo Mayo chasing Vinny Jr. on the third Real Madrid goal. When I say chasing, there wasn't a lot of chasing going on after a while, was there?
No. As soon as I think Modric releases the pass again, and as soon as that pass is released, there's only one outcome, and that's going to be he's going to be through on goal with a goalkeeper to beat. And the outcome probably was always going to be in finishing it off.
It was actually genuinely bad played out by Uemayo, wasn't it? Because it allows Vinny to go around the goalkeeper. Whereas at least if you chase him, even if you're not going to win the race against him, at least you can limit him. You can limit one of his options. You can cut off an option, can't you?
You can put him under some pressure. At worst, you chase back and cover the goalkeeper and get behind the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
If he can't cut Vinicius off, if he's got away, that turn of speed. It's not easy to keep up with him. Of course it isn't. But you could at least run towards goal and maybe slide in and clear it off the line and stuff like that. So it was an air of resignation about that run back. Yeah. I can't catch him. I'm going to have to rely on my goalkeeper to try and get me out of trouble.
Yes.
But that's what Real Madrid do when they hit you and finish off their chances. I'm not sure what the stat count was on the chances, but they didn't create that many more chances. But how efficient you are in front of the goal turns a good team into a great team, and a good team into a team that wins trophies, which is exactly what they do and will probably do again this season.
I'll have a look and see if I can find an XG, Terry, which is what we love these days.
Tchouaméni did okay. Camavinga did okay.
But that's the big question, isn't it? I'll tell you the XG in a bit. Anyway, to be fair, tell us about Casemiro is gone. So we record Monday late morning. So patrons will have this soon. I'm not sure when everybody else will get it, but by the time it gets it, Casemiro might be pictures of him in a Man United shirt being unveiled. I can see why Real Madrid are selling him, because they're getting a lot of money for him, and they've got young midfielders at the club who they're sort of making space for and putting some money in the bank. I can see why Man United want him, because they just don't have a player who's any good in that who plays in that area of the pitch. That's blunt.
But and I can see why Casemiro.
Yeah.
Done as well. I mean, he's going out on a high. Real Madrid have won the La Liga and won the Champions League. He's going out as a champion, 5 times winner. All the challenges are there. He's only all he can do is match what they've done in the past. And at the age of 30, isn't he? I think Casemiro.
Yeah.
It's a good challenge. And Man United are, you know, a massive club. They've got three there now, haven't they? Ronaldo, Varane, Casemiro. Sooner or later, they've got to start becoming good again. And he would have been ideal for the game against Liverpool.
Yeah.
Casemiro, that's for sure, but it's too late to get that done.
So he rings up Rafa Varane and he says, well, so what's it like at Man United?
Yeah. And Ronaldo.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, about a year ago, I was regarded as the best defender in the world, and now I'm sitting on the bench. Yeah. That's... Yeah.
I mean, I get it from as long as it works out. It's going to be interesting seeing Casemiro playing for someone other than Real Madrid. I had my reservations. I think he was fortunate. He was the right place at the right time when Real Madrid chose to use a holding midfielder. Yarramendi had just left the club and he was been on loan at Porto. He came back and Zidane was allowed to use a defensive midfielder because prior to that, Rafa Benitez was criticised for choosing to play one in some games. And I did the 4-0 Clasico at the Bernabeu and that was, well, Benitez is going and Zidane's coming in. And for two reasons, they needed a holding midfielder and Zidane, because he's Zidane, he's allowed to play one. If he wants to play one, he can. Rafa Benitez wasn't. He was criticised for doing it. So, and Casemiro was in the right place at the right time. He was the only one available. And at that time, I thought they could do better and should do better. And then how wrong was I over those, you know, those years that he was at Real Madrid? He turned into a really hugely important player for them in terms of their success. And, you know, he's frustrated the life out of people that don't support Real Madrid because of his ability to not pick up 2 yellow cards in a game. And he's been a warrior for Real Madrid, the perfect foil for Modric and Kroos. It's historically going to be an iconic midfield trio in football, not just at Real Madrid. And to see 8, 10 and 14 lining up on a regular basis, year after year, game after game, it's the records. We'll have to study their record. How many games they've actually played together as a three, because we talk about rotation and stuff like that and the success the three of them have had. So therefore, that's why I'm really interested to see what he's going to be like away from Modric and Kroos, away from Real Madrid, and playing with different players in a different system, in a different style, to see if, you know, we talk about guarantees on a player that's, you know, Lewandowski, we think there's a guarantee, and he's proving that will be the case, that he does score goals. But it's slightly different for Casemiro. There's no guarantee that he's going to go there and not be shaken up by the way that, you know, the Premier League is played, the style of Manchester United, how it's going to be alongside new teammates that are not Toni Kroos and Luka Modric. It's going to be really interesting to see, you know.
Scott Mitchell, Fred.
I mean, at Real Madrid, he's been world-class. But it's going to be interesting that, you know, to see how he fares at another club. But I think it's a good deal from all perspectives. As long as it works out, as long as Casemiro does make a difference to Manchester United. If he doesn't, then I did an interview and I said, people are not going to be clapping Casemiro for being your classic Brazilian Real Madrid midfield player. They're not, the Stretford end, they're not going to start singing his name because he's bringing the ball down on his chest and picking out passes and gliding past opponents. They'll probably find after a while they're clapping him because he's plugging gaps and he's putting his foot in and he's sweeping up danger. But that is what, you know, teams do need. And he can bring that. It's going to be really interesting to see how he does in the Premier League.
Sevilla 1, Valladolid 1. Sevilla, I mean, they got away with it to that extent, didn't they? Because Asenjo had a howler right at the end of the game. Could have been worse. They were already whistled off. This was a game with a couple more reds. These were on the bench, weren't they? I'm not sure what happened.
Campos probably should have got a couple of decisions went Sevilla's way.
Yeah.
In week one, they were unlucky with a penalty against them. But in this one, I thought there should have been a blatant penalty. That I'm seeing the replay of it. I'm looking at it. I'm thinking, Oh, goodness me, that's a nailed on penalty. It's one where you're thinking, VAR, oh, why didn't the referee see that? That's what I was looking at, thinking, that's got to be a penalty given. I'm trying to see who's the players involved. I should know it, sorry. Friday seems ages away. Friday night. And you're looking at it and you're thinking, oh, a player that actually did well, Nianzu, who they've signed from Bayern Munich, the big central defender, 20 years old. It's a classic Munchie signing. The first time I've seen him, he was playing alongside Rekic, and he makes the foul. I think it might be on Sergi Guardiola. But it's a clear kick across the shins where a defender's one against one in his own penalty box, twisting and turning. He has a swipe at the ball, misses it completely, and kicks the player directly on the shin pad. And you think, oh, yeah, I didn't see that in real time. There was a hint of a dive, and it was played, ignored.
Right.
So Sevilla were really lucky on that one. But Nianzu played really well, looked a really good player. My frustration, I may as well just find a clip from a previous podcast about Lopetegui. Sevilla had all the possession, very little defending to do. They must have put in about 3,000 crosses into the penalty area. And just when you're thinking, good, have a gamble, put another striker on. No, he takes off Rafa Mir, who was struggling to find the back of the net. And he puts on Nziri. So he didn't change anything. And then you're thinking, well, he's got Isco left. Put Isco on. You're dominating the game. You can't find the goal. Put Isco on. He takes Papu Gomez off. It's a like-for-like change. Lopetegui does not risk anything. And there's no variation in their play. It's get the ball forward, get it wide, get it crossed. Get the ball forward, get it wide, get it crossed. But if that's your game plan, you're not building up through midfield. You don't need all these midfield players. You're playing wide attacking players. Again, the team selection is an issue. He doesn't get the best out of players because they lose momentum that they're not playing. Ocampos was on the bench. He came on. And you're looking at it, you're thinking, I don't know. I'm sure we've got some Sevilla supporters. I don't know Sevilla's strongest 11 now.
Mm-hmm.
Or what Lopetegui believes is his strongest 11. I could probably have a go at it and come up with the 11 in a system of play I would probably have some idea. But it changes from game to, I think it's five changes from the first game. Now, if you go into a pre-season and you pick your strongest team, what you believe is your strongest team in week one, surely you don't have to make five changes in the second game. And you don't have to rotate because they haven't played another game. There's no midweek football. So again, it's a lack of faith. I thought that was my best 11. Throw them out, bring in a new starting 11, make five changes. And his lack of variation in tactics is driving me. And you can see him on the touchline ranting and raving, get the ball out wide, and then it gets crossed, whether it's a fullback, whether it's a Lamella or someone like that. And it's cross after cross after cross with very few people in the penalty area.
And it's a bit of a cheat in a way, isn't it? Because you can say, oh, we got loads of crosses in. But if you put loads of midfielders in, you're more likely to have more of the ball, aren't you?
Exactly.
If you're using two strikers, it is a gamble, isn't it? Because you won't dominate possession. You won't get the number of crosses in. So, but like you say, that's him, isn't it? It's that lack of a gamble.
It's a variation. It doesn't have to be 4-4-2, 4-3-1-2, and you can still have that midfield domination with a player like Isco playing ahead of the midfield three. You can still get all the fullbacks that we have got are attacking. So at home against Valladolid, you're going to get those. Fullbacks will be playing almost as wingers, like we saw from Xavi with Dembele and Balde and Rafinha. And it's just, I find it frustrating looking at it and seeing the same game after game after game for Sevilla with this manager making the same decisions, the same style of play and the same problems, the same, you know, the lack of goals, the lack of creativity. It's just frustrating. I don't see a team that plays out the back into midfield. We did when he first took over. There was more emphasis on possession and playing out from the back, and they did it really well. But nowadays, when you watch Sevilla, it's fast people out wide, crossing the ball, and defenders, you know, just dropping deep and heading the ball away for fun and defending the penalty box. So it's a big issue for Sevilla, I think.
Osasuna, Terry, are one of the four teams at the top of the league, aren't they? Storming start to the season, 2-0 against Cadiz. Okay, you know, it was Cadiz, they were at home, but a good start to the season. A couple of penalties required. I'm trying to cast my mind as to whether these were good penalties or not. I think they...
Nothing untoward. Nothing untoward in these ones. Ledesma, I think, clatters into someone. Just, I think, might be a handball.
Goalkeepers get away with that, don't they, a lot of the time. But it was a penalty, wasn't it?
And Chimi took the first one. Interesting technique, actually, on Chimi and Borja Iglesias. Straight run-up.
And then he hits it. He twists his, opens up his foot a lot, doesn't he? But he gets a lot of power in it, doesn't he? So,
And Borja Iglesias did a similar type penalty as well for his first one.
Yeah,
well, second one he was more orthodox and
getting enough practice. These La Liga strikers, aren't they?
Chimi wasn't on for the second one.
Yeah,
it was Kike Garcia took it.
Yeah,
but no, Osasuna just had too much for Cadiz. It's going to be a tough season for Cadiz. Whether they've still got time to do some work in the transfer market, I think there's only one new player from last season playing. And Zel Dura at right back. The rest were the same players as last year. It did well to survive, but you want to push on from that because otherwise you get caught. If you stand still, you'll get caught. So I think Cadiz need a little bit of work in the transfer market.
Have you spotted the referee's technique on the red card?
Didn't he give the thumbs up as going up you go as well? It was like a bang, yellow, red, bang, and a thumb. Go on your bike.
He must have had, I can't remember, a card in each pocket, I think, didn't he? And he got them out at the same time. Bang, there you go. Hey.
And then a thumb as if to say, go on
your bike. Yeah, on your way, son. Yes. Right, so where are we going to go? We've only got a couple of games left, because I'm going away a few days, basically, so that's why. So there's no Patreon special this week, so I apologise for that, Patreon, but we'll be back with regular stuff, and the European stuff starts very soon as well, so there will be a lot more Patreon stuff to come, and there won't be... When the season... We'll see. We never know. We never tell you the games far in advance. We'll try to do Mondays, unless the Monday game is very exciting. I think will be a rough plan. There we are.
Yeah, a couple of good ones next week. Cadiz Athletic and Valencia Atletico on Monday night.
Yeah, yeah. So while they're spreading the games out to avoid the main heat of the day, which is fair enough, actually. That makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So a couple of games left to do, including Rayo Vallecano, Terry, who were briefly top of the league, of course, weren't they? Having a draw last week, didn't they, against Barca? They were on four points, weren't they?
Yeah,
no goals conceded. They're hard to score against, aren't they? A couple of reds in this one early on, and I don't know if it was a good free kick routine or not. If I'm honest, for Izzy Palathon, because they work a free kick, but then the finish that he produces in the end is superb.
Yeah,
and you think, well, wasn't that good a routine then? Was it? Because he ends up shooting from long range anyway.
Well, I guess it gets him closer to goal, doesn't it? Yeah. He knocks it forward. It's Unai Lopez
plays a 1-2.
Pretty much stops the ball, which allows Issy Palazon to something they must have worked. I love watching set pieces, which are they've put some thought into it, some practice into it, but it needed a stunning finish.
Yeah,
it really was. And Rayo, a good Espanyol, look, you know, as if they're going to struggle. The two red cards, I think the first one for Lejeune, I didn't really see the red card in there, if I'm being honest. His arm is up. I don't see an elbow being thrown across the face of the opponent. It's a big centre-half going up with a striker, and I was surprised that was a straight red. Sergio Gomez, when you see the video, it's one of those where they're both running back towards goal. It's off the ball. The attacker looks like he's going to get the other side of the defender, and he throws his arm out and does catch him. So, Pathé Cisse, first season in La Liga last year, and I thought he was good. So far this season, he's been absolutely sensational. Scored the goal, did everything. One minute he's sitting between the two centre backs. The next minute he's between the playing alongside the centre forward. And that's how he got his goal, tapping at the far post. So he's a really good player, really interesting player. I'd love to know what Iraola does with them pre-season.
Yeah.
Because they got off to flyer last year, didn't they? And maintained it for half a season, which was enough to keep them out of trouble. And hopefully, from Rayo's perspective, for all those people queuing up, were they queuing up for season tickets?
Yeah, apparently so. Yeah. And like sleeping over and stuff, because they don't have any online booking system. And one of the reasons they give is that all the old people don't have the internet. And well, The old people aren't sleeping out in tents and sleeping bags overnight.
Yeah.
It's not 70 sleeping out to buy a season ticket, are they? So,
and again, they're playing the first two games away from home.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why that is. Is there more work going on in that stadium, or is it just they haven't sold any tickets yet because of their system?
Because everyone's so queuing.
They want at least 3 or 4 weeks of the season to plug some season tickets before they play a home game. I don't know. I mean, they have this reputation that they're a popular club in Spain. They're a unique football club. But come on, that's seeing those people sleeping rough on the streets.
Yeah.
I mean, it's absolutely... It's
no reason. There's no reason.
They were sleeping overnight. We're not just having to queue up during the day. People were having to queue overnight.
Yeah.
And basically sleeping rough in a long queue, a really long queue to get their season tickets, which La Liga should do something.
Yeah. You could easily put in a requirement saying you have to sell. I mean, we've talked about this before, and people just sort of glibly dismiss it, I think, around La Liga, that you should, for example, you know, the Premier League has a maximum away ticket price. You can only charge £30 for an away ticket, and you've got to be, and everyone sells online. I mean, 19 clubs in Spain sell online. It just seems obvious, isn't it, that there's certain things you could put in. You know, and you would have thought it's one line would be, and you've got to sell your tickets, make your tickets available online, because you can still sell them in person if you want to, couldn't you? You can still say, and also come down to the anyway.
If you're not,
one more game. Athletic seem to have no problem selling tickets, do they? It's always lively, isn't it? And I'm always willing them on to play. I think there's a yearning for good attacking football at Athletic, isn't there, in Bilbao? And they're never quite there, but they did get a good win here and a good finish, Berenguer, didn't they, to beat Valencia, who've struggled a bit.
I think it's 35 attempts on goal in the two games so far, and they've got one goal, which says a lot about, it's obvious what the problem is.
Yeah.
The fact that Villalibre got his chance in the first week, and obviously didn't come up, cut the mustard. So Iñaki Williams was back in the team up front, or back in the centre forward position. Nico Williams played wide. Berenguer is, I was listening to Albert on last night's programme, he does have an eye for goal, actually, Berenguer.
Mm-hmm.
So he kind of, Albert felt he played closer to the centre forward position than the wide position. And sometimes you do have to think outside the box in this situation where they can't go and buy a proven goal scorer. They've got to find one within their squad. And perhaps someone that's normally plays wide but has an eye for a goal might be the answer. We haven't seen Berenguer play as the centre forward, but that might be a solution for Valverde. So it was a close game, actually. The Athletic had more shots and more possession and I wouldn't say dominated the play, but Valencia did have their moments as well. Castillejo in particular had a good chance, and he reblazed it over the crossbar from close in. Marcos Andre had a fantastic run right at the end of the game and clipped the post. So we've seen slight differences from Valencia. And again, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with him prior to the transfer window closing. Maxi Gomez on the bench, Marcos Andre on the bench. So I think Gattuso might need to play one of them at least. In the next few weeks to try and get his team, you know, firing on all cylinders in front. Samuel Lino, is it? Lino? I'm not sure how you pronounce his name. Looked promising for Valencia. Yeah.
Mm.
He's an Atletico Madrid player they've just bought and loaned immediately to Valencia. He looked good, young 22-year-old Brazilian winger. So a little bit of promise for Valencia. And Athletic, you sense the relief, didn't you, when Berenguer? They've been blessed, Athletic, that they've had two home games as well.
Yeah.
Rye having two away, Athletic have had two at home. So it's decent start. They're up and running in terms of scoring a goal. But I always feel it's going to be a bit of a struggle for Athletic to really make the most of all the good play they show us on a regular basis, because they don't tuck their chances away.
I'm just going to give a right to reply to Michael Crimmins, who's one of our patrons, about Frankie de Jong. It was the pre-season one. And his objection is to repeat the phrase, "Oh, Frankie de Jong, €17 million." And this is what he says. So while I agree Barca have treated Frankie terribly this summer, I wish they'd have taken a different approach, but it's loose language to suggest that he's actually owed money. Frankie signed a new contract under which he got a year's extra year and a lot more money for lowering his salary. He's paid every penny he's owned under that contract. There is nothing unpaid from Barca. He's every right to insist his contract be honoured and to use the leverage to give him either to stay or to get a new club to match that money or to get a parachute payment from Barca on their way out. More power to him. But don't perpetuate the falsehood that he's not been paid. So, there we go. So,
yeah, no, it's really hard, isn't it? I was baffled as to how he'd been there a relatively short period of time and was owed, as we're led to believe, owed so much money, because I was pretty sure if he's owed 17 million, this is his third year, I think. He's probably still being paid a lot of money as well. So how did he get to that stage where he was on top of the high earnings he's picked up? On top of that, another 17 million. I do feel not aggrieved, but when I look at the Barcelona situation, people complaining about how much they're spending, they've spent the same as Nottingham Forest. We're talking about Barcelona. Yeah. And they've bought Rafinha, Lewandowski and Koundé for big money.
Yeah.
And everyone's up in arms about who they owe money to. And there's a certain sense of envy that is going around football to see one of the big clubs in Spain being knocked off their perch for a short period of time. And now, well, there was delight when that was happening. And now you do see a certain sense of envy when, they look pretty good again. We didn't think that was going to happen for a long time. Everybody thought it was going to be, you know, a decent period of time, wasn't it, with Barcelona not having world-class players. And the fact they've managed to turn it around, and, you know, next week they play at home against, I've got it here, Valladolid, I think, Barcelona. Yeah, Barca at home to Valladolid on Sunday early evening, not the late game. There'll be 80,000 there next week.
Yeah.
Because of that performance against the Real Sociedad. Because of the new players they've got at the club. Because the interest, the excitement, the enthusiasm is back there. La Liga need Barcelona to be that version. Football needs, Champions League needs Barcelona to be that version. But I think a lot of people were enjoying the fact that they were going through a difficult time. So, and it's interesting, you know, you look at the match reports and you look at the comments after last night's game. Very few comments because people are thinking, they were going to be suffering for a lot longer than one season, basically.
Yeah, yeah. That said, I mean, how long we got? Yeah, there's the fixtures for next week, everybody. Girona, Celta Vigo, Betis versus Osasuna, the Fridays, Saturdays, Elche, Real Sociedad, Rayo versus Mallorca, Almeria versus Sevilla. Ooh, big game, that one, Sevilla, isn't it? Saturday night. Then Getafe, Villarreal, Barcelona, Real Valladolid, and Espanyol, Real Madrid. And then Monday the 29th, Cadiz against Athletic, Valencia against Atletico Madrid. So that's all next week. I wonder what's going to happen in the transfer market this week. I wonder whether Frankie de Jong will go. We couldn't quite figure out his role. Wasn't it a direct pivot? Was he in replacement for Busquets at the weekend? I take your point about Barcelona. It's understandable that we shine a bright spotlight on them, isn't it? Because
they're such a
big club. And so you're looking at it, you think, well, Pjanic, Kessier. So, you know, for all of the forward positions, a lot to resolve there, isn't there? Or you have an awful lot of very good players sitting around doing not a lot, is the other way of putting it, isn't it? Do you think there'll be more? Something's got to happen. They've got to sell somebody, haven't they, I think, to get Koundé signed up and registered.
Exactly. Yeah. And when we do this podcast next week, we're probably going to have to do another one a couple of days later because 29th of August next week.
Yeah, that's true.
The transfer window will still be open. It's going to go down to the wire, I think. Clubs are not daft. They're looking at Barcelona's situation, trying to get the bargain and trying to get the best deal they can for a player that they might leave at the last minute. Now you ask, why do clubs do that? It saves them a bit of money, but it means they miss a player that could have been playing for them for a month. But that's how the transfer window goes. So Barcelona can be the focus of attention because it's needs must, isn't it? Real Madrid be interesting to see if they use any of the Casemiro money. I know they've already spent some of it, but we talk about Alaba can play in that holding midfield role as well. So I doubt whether Real Madrid will buy anyone.
No.
But, and Atletico, clubs want their players. And it looks a little bit as if they're unsure. Five strikers, that doesn't work out. That gives Simeone problems in terms of which two am I picking this week and bring the other three off the bench, which he did yesterday. So, yeah, no, there's plenty of stuff to happen. Sevilla might add to it. These things happen. You get injuries and you get a poor start in terms of results. Just when managers and directors of football think, that's us done now. You have this, an injury, you pick up an injury. Tecatito broke his ankle in training this week for Sevilla. That's something like that can kickstart some more action in the transfer market. Poor results kickstarts it. A club coming in for one of your players. So there's a lot of stuff to be done in the next 9-10 days.
Cool. We will be back with another podcast then. We'll have more football to look at then. And then, yeah, it's a good point, Terry. We'll come back and do a transfer roundup as well after that. So join us on Patreon, everyone. Patreon.com/LTEL. Or just join us for next week's podcast. And we'll see you for that. Bye-bye.